So up next we have Kat Sorensen, who was just having a giggling fit, so we'll see if she can pull that together. Kat is a reporter from the Clarion. Has been here for a year-ish?
Like 2 weeks.
Okay, we'll give it to her. 2 weeks short. So she gets extra points then for actually moving here in winterish time.
Yeah.
So that's not usually how that works. So, all right, Kat Sorensen.
So I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but I have about 9 of them ingrained on my skin. I have 9 tattoos, and I hate every single one of them. And you think that after the first one, I've learned my lesson. You don't really like tattoos. Like, stop getting them. But I got my first one when I was 14 years old, and I was on vacation in Kauai at my grandmother's timeshare. It's very fancy. Don't worry, we're not that rich anymore. And everybody in my family had been going on vacation there every year for 6 or 7 years, and it was finally my turn to go. We were old enough, we're gonna go to Hawaii, and then we get there and my grandma's like, okay, this is the last time we're going. And all of my older cousins had tattoos from this one tattoo parlor, and I'm like, Dad, can I please get a tattoo? And he's like, you're only 14. I'm like, yeah, but I'm an adult. I can make these kind of decisions for myself, and I want a tattoo really bad. I want to be just like all my cool older cousins. And so he said yes. Wow, awesome. Big factor here, though, my mom wasn't invited on the vacation, so she had no idea about this at the time. So we're in the timeshare, and there's this stupid art book on the coffee table. And I look at the art book, and I'm like, okay, open it up, point at something, I'll get that. And then within a day, I have a tattoo of a seagull flying over the ocean on my foot. And I would say about half the time I can tell you the artist who drew it, and the other half, I have no idea. Tonight, though, it's Walter Anderson. I remember to look it up. And so I'm 14, and I have a cool tattoo, and I can't wait to show my mom and show all the kids at school. And we're flying home to New Jersey from Hawaii, and I land in the car, and my mom does not talk to me for 2 months, and that's okay, because all the kids at school are gonna think I'm super cool. I get to school, they're all convinced I just draw it on every morning, because it's just a bunch of squiggly lines, and I get why they think that, but I have a tattoo now, I'm cool, like, I'm supposed to be popular, and I'm not. I'm still like a weirdo, but whatever. I have a tattoo and I like it. And then I start like hating the tattoo and all these other weird emotions that I have towards this thing on my foot that I thought I got because I thought I was an adult. And so I don't think about tattoos for 6 years. I also start dating a guy who hates tattoos, and he says, if you get another one, I'm going to break up with you. So as soon as he broke up with me, I got another one. And I'm like, screw you, I never want to get back together with you. And he still did. So I'm sitting in my office at this job that I hate, and I'm on the computer. I'm like, you know what, I'm Norwegian. Like, I should get something Norwegian tattooed on me. I Googled Norwegian stuff. And there's this thing that comes up, and it's a dromstuffer, and it means to bring your dreams into reality. So I go to the tattoo parlor, I said, I'll have this. And they give it to me, and now I still have it today because it's a tattoo and you can't get rid of them. And it turns out that it doesn't mean like the philosophical bring your dreams into reality. It means like, if you dream of wheat, in the morning you will have wheat. And I mean, I can just go to Freddy's and buy bread whenever I want, so I don't really need that kind of help. But then I would say like 6 months later, I'm sitting at my friend Kate's house on Easter Day, and I'm talking to her about how I'm super excited. Like, me and my family were getting along really well. My dad's not drinking anymore, it's great. Me and my mom were best friends, and she's like, oh, that's awesome, like, great. And so I go out and I get a tattoo of a fish hook because my dad's a fisherman, and I'm like fishing, and blah, blah, blah. My brother, when I come home and I show him the tattoo, I'm like, Arnold, look, it's a fish hook. How cool am I? He's like, I caught like 6 times more fish than you this year. And I'm like, you're right. I am not that great of a fisherman. And so I'm like, okay, well, I won't get any more tattoos. And then, then I'm working as a surf instructor at a surf camp, and I don't really even that surf that much. It's this weird little phase that I went through, and I'm talking to these people about what your favorite movies and books are, and I love Lord of the Rings and the Lord of the Rings books and the Lord of the Rings movies, and that was my jam. And so I'm sitting there, and it starts to rain, and you can't teach people how to surf in the rain because people are babies in New Jersey, not Alaska. In New Jersey, they're babies. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go get a Lord of the Rings tattoo because I have the day off now. And I walk into the tattoo parlor. He's like, what do you want? I'm like, something Lord of the Rings. He's like, I don't know anything about Lord of the Rings. I'm like, okay. And I Google cool Lord of the Rings tattoos, and they all suck. So then I'm like, well, you have a bunch of daggers on your wall. I love your flash sheets. He's like, yeah. He's like, okay, can you just make one of them blue, and we'll call it Sting? And Sting's a little sword that lights up blue whenever the orcs are around. And so he's like, yeah, where do you want it? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm wearing this bathing suit because I was surfing, and then all of a sudden I have my top off. I'm wearing just a bikini, and I'm getting a dagger right underneath my left breast, and that's my mom's least favorite out of all of them, and I agree. It just doesn't make any sense. And then, so the dagger, and then after the dagger, I think, I don't even remember, but I think I got the next one, my roommate at the time's boyfriend recently started tattooing, but he had all these tattoo needles all over the place. So she's like, hey, are you coming home for lunch today? I'm like, yeah, I'll be home. I'm like, I made some quinoa, like, gonna eat it. And she's like, cool, I'll give you a tattoo. So now I have a stick and poke flower pot. And I'm really mad about that one because I wanted that S that I used to draw in high school all the time. You know where you do S, da, 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 and then the dots? But she was like, no, that's stupid. And I'm like, a stick and poke flower pot is better. So I have that one. And then one night I had a big party at my house, and my friend Megan's an artist, and she's like drawing all these beautiful cacti, and I'm like, cool, I'm gonna get that tattooed on me tomorrow. And I did. And then like 2 weeks later, it was my birthday, and I was like, oh, I love The Simpsons. And so I got the three-eyed fish from The Simpsons. But this one was really stupid because I was at this tattoo parlor, and they were like, okay, come back and like 3 hours, and I go out and I meet my friend for brunch and Bloody Marys, and they call me like, okay, do you still want to do it? And I said, yes, I still want to do it. There was like a time lapse there between those decisions. And then I got a lobster with one eye. That one's really cool. That one's probably my favorite. But it was like on a lunch break at work because I was working at a seafood retail store. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to sell seafood for the rest of my life. No, I like quit like 2 weeks later. But the lobster is cool and I'll have it forever. And then this summer I went back to go visit my family in New Jersey. And everybody's like, oh, how's Alaska? I'm like, oh, it's great. It's amazing. I love it. And my old roommate's boyfriend has started apprenticing tattooing, so he's like, oh, I want to give you a tattoo. I'm like, great. He's like, what do you want? He's like, I'm like, I don't know. What can you do? He's like, eagles. I'm like, eagles? And now I have an eagle tattoo. I'm like, that's great. I'll have that forever. So I guess the thing about it is I hate them all, but I love them because they all are these moments in my life when I just went with my gut. And at the end of the day, I think you just got to go with your gut because you end up being a little bit different because of it. Thanks.
Kat Sorensen, showing us that some lessons, though learned, still leave some reminders. We should probably distribute recordings of that story to all tattoo parlors. Just as like, okay, you can still get what you want, but you gotta listen to this. It's 7 minutes, just listen to this first. It's like a waiver thing, you check that you listen, and then, all right, a one-eyed lobster, okay, that's fine, as long as... Yeah. Up next, we have Joe Spady. Joe Spady to the stage. As if you couldn't tell by the clapping, Joe is a local thespian. He grew up in the area. Soldotna High School graduate, I believe, correct? And a Kenai Performers alum and in Shrek. Okay. All right. So, Joe Spady.
All right. All right. So, I've been preparing for this story for weeks. And when I say that, I mean I've been trying to think of some lesson that I haven't learned and something that goes with the theme, and I've come up very empty again and again. I'm like, how about that? Oh, no, that's a terrible story. How about that? Oh, that's weird. No one wants to hear that. And so finally, this morning, when I woke up, I came up with the most applicable lesson not learned for me, at least. It's literally something I've done thousands of times. It's something I do every single day. Waking up. I'm terrible at it. I can't do it. I know how to do it. I just don't, and I will never learn that lesson ever. It's awful. Last night I went to bed like 10:30, and so I thought, oh, I'll just set my alarm for 8 o'clock. After snoozing it, I got up around 11. That's not unusual, unfortunately. So it's this ongoing battle forever. My parents have said it's a matter of mind over mattress. But my morning mind is no match for the relationship I have with that mattress. It is very intense. Anyway, so I actually went to my phone to look and see how many alarms am I actually using at this point. And right now, my day-to-day alarms, I have 8 alarms spanning over an hour time that I use in my phone, with an additional 2 more puzzle alarms, which are alarms that require me to solve an equation or do a memory puzzle in order to turn off the alarm. I then have 2 alarm clocks as well. I have one next to my bed, and then I was brilliant, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna put one over across the room in the bathroom. I'll have to get up out of bed, go all the way across the room, and once I'm up and I'm in the bathroom, I'll just get in the shower and get ready. No, I get out of bed, run to the bathroom, hit the snooze button, and run right back into bed. And this happens every morning. So I've come to realize my brain in the morning is just something else. It's weird. I just have thrown logic out the window, and now I'm just focusing on all these interesting theories that for some reason, if it works out that I can be in bed longer, I am totally believing it. There's something I was talking to my mom about this morning. Turns out we both do this weird one. I'll wake up at like 5:18 and I'm like, I'll wait till 5:20. I want a nice even number. And then I'll wake up at 5:24. I'm like, oh, I missed it. I'll wait till 5:25. And then I wake up, oh, it's 5:26, 5:30 it is, okay. And so this goes on for a while. And then it moves on to even more interesting thoughts like, Joe, you took a shower yesterday. Do you need to get up for a shower today? No, it's fine. That's fine, just stay in bed. You have an extra 45 minutes now. When does a shower take 45 minutes in the morning? So all these problems that I'm dealing with. Another fun one is I've started just taking a moment to center myself and just think about your day and the tasks you need to do. And then 9 minutes later, my alarm in the bathroom goes off and I have to run and turn that off. So none of these things are going well. Eventually, as I go through this hour battle in the morning to get myself up, at some point it finally clicks that you have to get out of bed or you're going to be fired. And so that gets me out of bed literally with so much adrenaline that I jump out of bed, jump into a cold shower. I'm running around. I found that I also have a weird habit of just still having my brain half asleep and surged with adrenaline that I'm like, multitask! And I'll just start brushing my teeth. I'm like, and my pants! And I'm just doing too many things that aren't helpful. And ultimately, I just am putting on shoes and deodorant, and none of these things are getting me out the door faster. And eventually I get out the door, and at that point I still usually have another hour where I just am not going to be smiling. I'm going to avoid eye contact when available. And if I have a conversation with someone, it's gonna be minimal. And though if you're offering me coffee, I will be very cordial. That's different. Anyway, that is essentially what my routines have come to. And at this point, I really don't expect that lesson to ever truly be learned. Ideally, I'm gonna be better than my situation is now. It might be the worst I've been at this point. But Keenan Performers friends, this is how you'll see me tomorrow morning. So be ready. So, all right, thank you.
That was a fascinating look at the inner life of Joe Spady. We're all grateful that he managed to drag himself out of bed to make it here on time tonight, so. Goals. Up next, there she is, Elizabeth Earle. Liz is a reporter at the Clarion and a skier now, I've noticed, and an outdoorsy person, and we will see what else. I don't know what your story is about this time, so I will be as hanging on your words as everyone else. Liz Earle.
I'm not a skier. I own a pair of skis. I can get on them. You guys are getting quite a look inside the Clarion newsroom tonight. You all read the newspaper. You don't really know what goes on in there. Now you do. So the first time I got hit by a car, Everything kind of looked like a scene from CSI. Like, everything slowed down. Like, everything was bright colors. People were screaming. I feel blood coming down the side of my face. I don't really feel in pain yet. Someone scoops me up from the pavement where I'm lying and carries me to the sidewalk. Somebody else is dramatically moving and has my shoes in their hand. Unlike CSI, everyone is sweating. So much because it's July in the Midwest. If you've ever been there, it's 85 degrees and 85% humidity, and it's like swimming, but you never cool off. Eventually, I'm on the sidewalk, and like the shock shaking sets in, and somebody's giving me a bear hug from behind to stop me from shaking, which doesn't work. Nobody has a shock blanket because it's July in the Midwest. Somebody hands me a glass bottle full of water. I can't remember how to drink. Somebody tells me what happened, which is basically that I was on my bicycle, headed straight that way, and then a red SUV was headed straight that way, and he didn't move fast enough, and I hit him, and I went into the intersection, and he stopped about 10 seconds and then kept driving, and my shoes went somewhere, and I went somewhere else, and my bike went somewhere else, and everyone is screaming, except for me. And somebody asked me, do we need to call an ambulance? Can we go to the hospital? I can see the hospital. It's like 3 blocks away. But my only response at this point is, please, please, please don't do that. I don't have insurance. And so nobody knows how to respond to that because I'm bleeding. And so somebody pulls my bicycle off a sidewalk and somebody else hands me my shoes and everyone says, have a nice day. And I proceed to, this is my 70s Schwinn bicycle, and it is not dented. This thing is made of solid iron. It probably weighs 50 pounds. The bicycle is fine. I am not. I've convinced myself I am, because I have about a mile and a half walk home, because I'm deeply impoverished at this point, because I'm a college student in Chicago, and a bus ride costs $2.25. So I'm gonna walk a mile and a half home with bicycle and a contusion from about here to here and probably a couple of broken ribs. And so I'm like, okay. And so I take off across the north side of Chicago and occasionally tell some woman as I'm walking, just, no, I'm fine. And she says, don't look at her, honey. And I'm bleeding and streaked with asphalt. But I managed to make it home. And one of my roommates is an EMT, and he tells me, yeah, you probably have a couple of broken ribs. And I have a huge contusion all over me. So I sit in my armchair with a cup of coffee and watch Annie Hall and feel sorry for myself for the rest of the day. The next day, I get back on my bicycle, because living in Chicago, you don't have a car. I spent probably thousands of hours on a bicycle when I was living in Chicago. And when I said that just now, some of you heard a lot. I literally mean thousands. I biked probably about 100 miles a week, 150 miles a week for the couple of years that I lived there. I was a bicycle courier delivering everything from like diapers to tacos from all over Chicago at all hours of the day and night. I commuted every day from about March until November. So I spent a lot of hours on a bicycle. And while there are bike lanes, there are not enough bike lanes. And I spent a lot of hours in traffic and wore a helmet, but you don't wear football gear. And so you wear July in the Midwest. And so you wear a tank top and shorts. And so if you eat the asphalt, you're going to eat the asphalt. And so I've done just about everything there is to do. I've been doored. I've been flipped over the lids of taxis while the taxis then flipped me off. And then I've been rear-ended in intersections. I've been hit by cars about 8 to 10 times. And I was part of a pretty tight-knit group of bicyclists. There were about 50 or 60 of us. Most of us, the way I like to refer to them is bicycle hooligans. Because we would ride up the streets at 2 in the morning, a group of 50 or 60 of us throwing a football back and forth while bicycling, listening to music on a really loud boombox on our way to go get diner food. They're a great group of people. They're utterly careless. Most of the time when you're going to get hit by a car, you're just like, oh man, I'm so sorry. That is not how they reacted. Most of the time it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that to you. Ugh! And so one of my friends actually used to carry a tiny hammer to hit the hoods of cars when they would do something horrible. I have smacked more than a few quarter panels in my day. Drivers, I'm sure, nice people from the suburbs who didn't know what they were doing, I'm sure thought I was insane. But it's like a war. There were war stories, too. One of my friends got flipped over a lid by a drunk driver and got killed in 2013. Another one of my friends got run over by a tour bus in downtown Chicago, 2016. Not all of us wear helmets. That's something that my boss will tell you, that he sees me driving around without a helmet more frequently than I should. I wish I could say I learned. I didn't. I still didn't wear a helmet. I got hit by cars 8 to 10 times after the first time. These days, I still carry the scars a little bit. Catch me standing up and three or four things will crack, and I can't always tell you exactly where they are. I'm 25. That should not be that case. If I had learned my lesson a little sooner, maybe I could have helped somebody else. I can tell you there's a couple of lessons I learned. One is that you should absolutely care about the American healthcare system, because if someone gets hit by a car and looks down a sidewalk and sees a hospital, they should absolutely ask to be taken there. That's a lesson I did learn. The other lessons that you think you learn are probably subjective. Like, I'll tell you I learned to wear a helmet. My boss will not tell you that. I'll tell you that I learned to be more careful. Other people will not tell you that. The one lesson that I hope I never learn is to be scared of bicycles, because that's something that I hope I always get back on the bicycle after getting knocked off. Thank you.
Up next, we've got Sally Cassano. Sally has been involved in the Keynote Performers. She is also involved in KDLL Public Radio. So if you listen on Wednesday night, she is the host of Dead Musicians and is on the KDLL board. So she's the boss of me, basically. And we appreciate that. And she has learned a great many lessons in her life, but there is one lesson that she is very grateful that she has not learned. And we are going to hear about that. Sally Cassano.
There's a lot of folks who have tried to teach me a lesson. And I'm going to tell you a few stories about not learning it. 6 years old, my mom's a den mother, and I'm raised in the Flathead Valley. We're talking beautiful. It looks a lot like this, actually. We have a little more light, but this is Kalispell, Montana, near Glacier Park. And I am the child of a Mormon mother and a Catholic father. Not just a regular Catholic father. This is a Catholic family from Aqua Viva. This is Catholic. So I'm in Catholic school every day of the week, and I am also in primary and mutual and seminary and all of those things that good Mormon girls do. 6 years old, mom's a den mother, and all the friends in my neighborhood, all my friends, Travis and Bill and John and Mike and Kelly and all these people, I'm the only girl, and those are my friends. And they're coming over for Cub Scouts. I want to be a Cub Scout. I want to be a Cub Scout. I want to be a Cub Scout. Well, you can't. You can't do that. You can't be a Cub Scout with your friends. Okay. But I want to be a Cub Scout, and at 6, I'm going to throw a tantrum about it. Sally, when will you ever learn your lesson? And at 10, I had resolved I couldn't be a Cub Scout. I couldn't do some of those things. But at 10, I was told, you can't play with those kids anymore. You're growing up. You need to be in here. You need to be doing things that are more, I'm going to say it, ladylike. All right. So you'd be more ladylike. So now I have no friends in my neighborhood because I'm not allowed to play. Why can't I play with Travis and Johnny Todd and Bill Todd and the whole group? Well, I asked one of the sisters, because at that time we had like the first missionaries that were women over, Sister Retch of Sister Turner, and I said, why can't I play with them? And she said, I think your mom's trying to protect you. Maybe she's worried they might hurt you. And I said, well, why wouldn't she just tell them, don't hurt her? So I couldn't play with them. But I did anyway. And I didn't tell. As a freshman in high school, I wanted to take part in shop. I did not want to sew anymore. I mean, as a Mormon child, I was born from the womb with a sewing machine in my hand. I could sew. I could cook. I knew how to store things. I knew all of those things. I could can. But I wanted to do what my brothers did and what my friends did with their mostly fathers. But there was one family in the neighborhood who had a daughter, and the mother didn't have a husband, and the mother worked on things. And I thought, I might like to try that. But I wasn't allowed. It was a lesson I just wouldn't learn. So I found out that at that age, I wasn't going to be able to make some of those decisions. I forged the paper so I could enter into shop class, and I did. And that's a good thing, because at 21, when I was teaching tap dance, which is like my life, it's another life, it's a side life, as a tap dancer and the performer and all of those things, but my husband then said, I'm moving to Nevada and you're coming with me and you're giving up your studio. Okay, that's the right thing to do. I did it. I can always teach tap in Nevada. Right? In Nevada. There's only three things in Nevada. There's mining, there's gambling, and the big P, prostitution. Okay. So I went mining. I thought, you know, I started looking at, you know, I'm at the convenience stores, and I'm like, I have applied to these, you know, there's this, you know, no one cares about teaching dance. I'm going to volunteer at the school I'm going to teach. No. Okay, well, I think in shop I could run a pretty good bead, and there's an ad in the paper for Brandt's Welding if you can pass a coupon test. I could probably, all right, I could do that. I'm looking around at the people already doing it and going, I could probably do that. So I went and I had my bucket of tools and I said, I'm here for your coupon test. And all right, let the little lady in. And of course I passed the coupon test. They had to hire me, and then I worked in the pit of Echo Bay. But then when I had children and I saw that they were growing up in the same culture, in the same society that I grew up in, and were being limited in the same way. And I hadn't recognized it until my son, who was 5 at the time, his teacher said to me at parent-teacher conference, Sally, a little boy in the playground said, when your son threw the ball today, Crockett, you throw like a girl. But your son said, thanks! Thanks! Woo! Woo! He didn't know! He didn't know. And that wasn't a lesson that he is going to have to learn, because he already knew it. The lesson I didn't learn because it wasn't my lesson to learn. The only limitations that we have on ourselves are those that we place on ourselves. Don't learn that lesson. That's it.
Our last storyteller tonight is actually not a storyteller, but three storytellers. So we've got some folks who I've been on an adventure with it, and you heard the story of that adventure when Allie Cunningham told it about her wedding day. That was an adventure where I thought it would be a good idea to make a pot of curry and bring 2 watermelons and 2 pigs of beer on a hiking trip where the hiking was supposed to be very easy and short. And instead there was like 8 feet of snow, it was pouring rain sideways, and Joel had to carry the watermelons that I insisted on bringing. And we're still friends, I think, but I'm still in trouble for that. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about each one of these folks. So
joy taught me more about scotch than I've ever learned in my life. I went to a scotch tasting that Joy put on, and I had to go and ask my friend what scotch was, and so that I could go to the tasting and not be an idiot. So Joy's a wealth of knowledge there if anyone needs to know anything about scotch. And Emily is more competitive. Do we have any fly fisher folks in here? Any fisher folks in general? Well, she is more a competitive fly fisherman than all y'all put together. She looks real cute and nice, but don't get in her way. And then Joel does so much good stuff in this community. I was on a bike ride last night, and there was we came across the skating rink in the park, and a very happily married woman of 50 years old said with a dreamy voice, "Oh, Joel is so wonderful." And you know what? I think if we all agree, we really appreciate all the cool stuff you do for us in this community, and it's nice to have three great young folks who live here and who are going to share a story with us for the first time. So without further ado, your last storytellers.
Like you heard, my name's Joel, this is Joy, this is Emily. So we got a couple of adventure stories that we're going to tell you. First one is about 2 years ago. I was planning a trip out to my cabin. I've got a family cabin that's Fox River Valley. So if you're in Homer, Kay Bay ends up at the Fox River, and then you go up the valley for, it's 11 miles, and we've got a cabin that overlooks the whole head of the bay there. And I've been out there a million times. I've been going since I was like 5. Snow machining, biking, skiing, hiking, whatever. This trip was a hike. It was in the summertime, and we were actually bringing some friends that had never been out there before, so we were pretty excited. And they kind of asked me, it's 11 miles, and they're like, "Well, what's the trail like?" And I was like, "Well, it's flat. I mean, you go down onto the beach, you walk on the beach for a little while, and then you get to the mud flats, and you get across the mud flats, and then you follow the river, this four-wheeler trail, and then there's like just a little hill at the very end, and then you're at the cabin."
Yeah, so let me tell you about how that trip went. So you hear your friend say, "It's an easy 11 miles, no big deal." And sometimes it how things are described is how you prepare. And so I thought, well, okay, it's easy. I'm gonna go for comfort. Most of the stuff we need is at the cabin. I'm not gonna put a lot of thought or effort into preparing for this trip. We're just gonna go. This is gonna be great. So I in fact wore my tennis shoes, and another person in the group was just so nonchalant about it that they actually forgot their shoes at home and had to wear Joel's tennis shoes that were in his car. But we're like, no big deal, like, let's just go. So we get to the first little obstacle, and that is Fox Creek. Not a big deal either, except that I have tennis shoes on, which are a lot slicker than hiking shoes, and I fall in the creek and completely get drenched, injure my shin, and go, okay, well, let's just keep going. Like, and then we get to these mud flats that are slick as snot. And then I'm like, oh, this is really intense. Like, how long is this? He's like, oh, 6 miles. And so we go as far as we can. Like, we're going and going and trying to just, like, not quit sliding in the mud and falling. And we go, is there by any chance another trail? He said, yeah, there's another one. It's a horse trail. We go to that one. It is just as muddy, but a different kind of mud. So it wasn't any easier, but it was, okay, so we made it. And then we get to the little hill. A little is not how I would describe it. So you're going up, and it's like a while, and that's the end. So it's like, I don't know how well I trust your description of things. So we get there, we have an awesome weekend. It's like, we got great food, great company, it's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. Have a great time just being disconnected from everything. And then we're like, okay, we know what we're getting ourselves into, let's go. Let's go back. So we get down to the bottom of the hill. A friend twists his ankle at the bottom of the hill, and not just twists his ankle, but like really twists his ankle. That means that we still have 10 miles to go, 6 of those being slick mud flats. And so we take some of his stuff out of his pack to make it lighter. He has a little, cane. We make it across the mud flats, and then there, we have 3 dogs with us. There are like 2 herds of like cows with bulls in these herds, and one of our dogs is a Malamute, and we're going, okay, Now we have to get past these cows without any kind of situation. So we rein them in, get it done. We get past that. We finally get back to Homer, have dinner, great dinner. Very ending of that trip, a friend goes to close the back of their door and it shatters. The back window just shatters. And we're like, okay. And the last moment of that trip, I'm like, that was the best trip ever. That was so awesome. And the lesson I learned on that trip, though, was before you go out with a friend and they have a qualifier, like it's easy or it's short or whatever, really ask more questions to get a better description of what that means and what their definition is compared to yours. So that was adventure number one.
So about a year ago, I was helping a couple friends. They were planning to get married in Prince William Sound. You'd heard parts of this story in previous episodes, but we were doing a lot of planning. It was awesome. It was late May. It was warm here. We're working on our suntans. We had like a planning meeting at my house where we were like, there was whiteboards and drawings and like we were doing it. So they had met over in Prince William Sound fishing, and so this was a pretty magical spot for them, and they were excited. None of us had been over there, and so we were going out to Schroed Lake, and there's a cabin, and we knew that there was a water taxi to get as far as we could. There was going to be like a canoe kayak thing where we have to like get into this like shallower bay area to get to the trailhead, and then it was a half mile. We kept hearing half mile, half mile, half mile. So it's just a half mile. And so we're like, okay, it's sunny, like we're good. Well, then like a couple days before that trip, we decided to make a phone call over to the ranger station on the other side. And that's when we realized all of our plans needed to be adjusted just a little bit.
So we barely make it through the Whittier Tunnel and get on the water taxi, and it is Prince William Sound. So for those of you that have been there, it's raining, it's pouring, and the rain's coming in sideways. We get on the water taxi, and most of us are wet before the trip even begins, and we're out there for 3 days, so go figure. but the water taxi drops us off. The first group gets in the kayaks. They make their way to the trailhead, which takes a little bit longer to find than planned. We all make it to the trailhead eventually, and so there is... Caitlin said 8, but I'm going to say 12 feet of snow. And not enough snowshoes to go around. So we decide to get on and start packing or start hiking. We're going up and downhill trying to find this trail that is buried under this feet of snow, and no one's been out there since last fall. So yeah, we start hiking, and did I mention it's still pouring rain? And Caitlin has her pot of curry. we don't want to stop because if we do, we're afraid that we might get the hypothermia set in. And, so we keep walking. Eventually, after what feels like hours, we spot the cabin, make a mad dash. We get in there, dry off, eat some warm food, go to sleep. And the next day is just this gorgeous day. The clouds part. There's a beautiful bluebird sky. And the wedding is just marvelous. It's beautiful, and lots of good gourmet cheeses, fancy meats, good libations, and music. And so we had a great time, almost forget all the, you know, trauma that we experienced over the past 24 hours. But all that to say, the lesson learned is that plans may, you know, the best laid plans are not, they might go awry every once in a while.
All right, so adventure number 3, this is this summer. We actually was planning a bike trip up to Crescent Lake. There was a lot of us going with varying levels of skill. I'd biked that trail a million times, I've hiked it. And as far as mountain biking in Alaska goes, that's a pretty common mountain biking trail, fairly easy. There's like 8 or 9 of us and a couple dogs, and we were going to go up to the lake. We were camping out. The weather was going to be great. Fly fishing, you know, s'mores and whiskey around the fire. And the best part is we knew, like, if you've ever been to Crescent Lake, the way down, it's all kind of downhill back to your car. So I was like, well, if we can get there, that's great. Cause on the way home, it's just like this nice, easy, gradual, you know, ride back down to the vehicles.
There's that word, easy again. So as he said, some of us had varying levels of skill when it came to mountain biking and whatnot. I personally had, you know, ridden my bike since high school, but hadn't really been out on the trail all that much. And then so I got to the trailhead a little bit later than some of the other crew. I was with some other friends. We got our stuff on our bikes and we start biking, and I'm like going up the hill and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to bike this whole thing up there. So then I end up pushing my bike most of the way. And I get there, friends are there, it's great, we have such a good time, great fly fishing, we got a lot of grayling. It was just a really, you know, give each other a lot of high fives, all this good stuff. And so the next day we're like, oh yeah, all downhill from here. But if you, there's this thing with mountain biking where there's this difference between like sometimes speed and comfortability, and there's this danger zone if you go too slow. And I literally hadn't probably gone mountain biking since high school, like 20 years ago. And so it was like that adult brain of mine kicked in. I didn't have that, you know, no fear factor that teenagers have anymore. And so I was like going super slow. Some of us fell quite a few times. And then I was way slower than everybody else. And at one point, I actually flipped over my handlebars, and the handlebars hit me in a way that gave me a hematoma for at least 3 months after that. And I'm laying on, and I finally catch up to my friends who are sitting there going like, and I'm like crying like a little girl, like I feel like a little girl that just fell off her bike, and I'm like, I fell off my bike and I'm okay, and but I'm just gonna push it. And so I'm in the back, Joel's the fastest, he's in the front. We go a little further, and I see Joel walking up the path, and I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, I'm getting Dave's bike. And I was like, okay. And then I saw Emily, and she's like crying, and I was like, what's going on? She's like, I'm helping Joel get Dave's bike. And then I walk up the path a little further, and I see Dave, my friend Dave, who's here, and our friend Shane, who's a PA. Dave's arm he's like bleeding. He looks like a wreck. And I'm going, oh no, what happened? He's like, well, I went off that 30-foot cliff back there. They went to go get my bike because it's still down by the water. Luckily, he did not sustain any injuries that prevented us from getting out of there. He did fine. He was actually way faster than me going down the rest of the way. And we get to the parking lot, and I'm like, this was the best. This was such a good trip. I had so much fun. But the lesson I learned that day was, do not overestimate your abilities, especially if you're comparing them to things you haven't done since you were a teenager, or to abilities of a friend who does this all the time. So that was what I learned on that adventure.
All right, last story. So this is this past fall, we were planning one last trip before the snow fell. We were gonna go over to Kay Bay State Park, which is across from Homer. A couple of us in the room, actually am part of that group, ran trail crews over in Kay Bay. And so this was gonna be a great opportunity for us to bring our friends over to, you know, a special place that in our hearts where we've helped build the trails and maintain the trails and spent, you know, tons of hours sweating and running with chainsaws over there. So it's going to be great. Pretty simple trip. You know, there was going to be another water taxi, but we've kind of figured out the water taxi thing yet. And it was about a 5-mile hike into the cabin. And we have the cabin at Chinapoo Lake reserved for 2 nights. And there's going to be a boat there so we can go out in the water and play. You know, the weather looks good. Like, it's gonna be sunny, but it's fall, so it's gonna be kind of cold and whatnot. So that was the plan, you know? Easy 3-day trip in Kay Bay with a possible summit of Poot Peak if we can pull it off.
And actually, that trip went according to plan. So we got there, no one forgot any essential items, there was no near-death experiences, the trail was as described, so not easy, but not too difficult either. So basically had a great weekend. We did climb Poot Peak. We couldn't get in the boat though. It had a big gaping hole. So we just hung out in the cabin, had lots of fun. And that was until the way back. So we get to the port where the water taxi is supposed to pick us up, and Mako, thank you. Mako from Mako's water taxi is actually there to greet us. And he decided that, he mentioned that the bay is a little nautical, and that he decided to not make a second trip. There was another party there, and so he's going to take us all back at the same time. So this other party, they have two dogs, and we have the three dogs that we've mentioned earlier. They don't quite get along. There's a lot of barking, and this is a 30-foot boat, so we're trying to make everybody happy. We get on, and we take off, and Mako says that as soon as we turn the corner, that everyone, including the dogs and all of our gear, needs to be in this cabin. So, you know, again, I don't know much about being on the open water, so all right, that we can do that. We get everybody in, and we turned the corner, and I realized why he wanted us in this tiny little cabin. There were about 10-foot swells, and if you've watched The Perfect Storm, that's what it felt like. We were going up and crashing down. So we almost hit a tree as well and was worried that the motors would be taken out, but he is a great captain. Knew what he was doing. And the 45-minute boat ride that we had taken out was now feeling like an eternity. And we just wanted to see the Homer spit. So we get there. We kiss the ground once we make it. Decide to do a celebratory round at the Salty Dog. And then we have to make it off the spit. Because these 10-foot swells were now lobbing 30-pound boulders onto the spit. To the point that there was a vehicle that had been high centered. So we drive down the pedestrian walkway to avoid getting hit by rocks. We make it to Fat Olive's, have a wonderful dinner, and again, the most wonderful trip of our lives. So, but the lesson learned there is that Mother Nature always has an ace up her sleeve.
So we learned a lot. But the lesson that we didn't learn, and the one that we don't ever really want to learn, is don't go on adventures with Joel, because you'll probably end up wet and cold and exhausted and bleeding and muddy, crying, frustrated. But all of those things is what makes those adventures fun.
Thank you, and that's all we have for tonight. I wanted to say thank you to every single one of you who is sitting in the audience, because this storytelling night doesn't work if there's just storytellers. You are the ones who hold the space and listen to your friends and neighbors tell, so thank you. And I want to say to anyone who hasn't told a story, please consider coming up and telling a story. We want there to be new storytellers up here every single night. So the next one, remember in your calendars, Friday, April 13th, spring cleaning, tales of out with the old and in with the new. And please thank Odie's, and we're really grateful to have Odie's to host this event.